Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities, and it's provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through generous underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent, and I'm your host for today, Chris Kington Barker. For more than 40 years, each October, the community of Atascadero celebrates Colony Days and the reenactment of the original tent city. But what is Colony Days? Why is it celebrated? How did Atascadero begin? And who the heck is E.G. Lewis? So today's show is going to help answer all of those questions, and my guests today are going to be the source of those answers, and they are with me right now, Nick Mattson, who is the Colony Days Committee Vice Chair, and Karen McNavera, who is the Committee Chair for Colony Days. And joining us in a little while, when he gets here, is Greg Ravitt, who is the Colony Days participant and a Atascadero Historical Society member. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities. And we are looking forward to hearing from you as well, even though this is Pledge Drive. And please do remember it is Pledge Drive this week. We're also taking phone calls for this show with your comments and questions, and would love to hear from you about Colony Days if you've experienced it, or if you've got questions about how you can experience it. And you can call in and ask those questions or make those comments at 781-3875. Again, it's 781-3875. And I want to welcome you, Nick and Karen.
Thank you very much.
Here. Thank you.
So I've got to admit, I have never been to a Colony Days. I have heard of it, but I really know nothing about it. So this is kind of, this is pretty cool for me. I get to have a history lesson about Atascadero, which was not in my history book, by the way.
Exactly.
It wasn't. And also about Colony Days. So first, why don't we start right off with... talking a little bit about, let's go to E.G. Lewis. I think that's kind of a good place to begin, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, E.G. Lewis really doesn't have a single title. He was an entrepreneur in the 1800s and then eventually 1900s, and he came to Atascadero, but started out as a traveling salesman. And in fact, I know one of the things, he sold many, many things, but started out, I think, selling pocket watches. And I think next might have been flea powder. And in the 1800s, he kind of listed his occupation as a traveling salesman. So he was a promoter. And eventually bought it was a newspaper in St. Louis, Missouri. Became quite successful. I think he owned two or three of them. And in that period of time, he started a bank. It was bank by mail scheme. He built University City. He was a promoter during the St. Louis World's Fair, which is pretty significant. He got a lot of his ideas for city planning from that. And about 1904, and he actually created a tent city in St. Louis, Missouri, in University City, for people to come to when they were staying at the World's Fair. So he was promoting his own city, University City, at the same time that people were coming, of course, from all over the United States or the world to visit the fair. Now, later on, when he founded Atascadero,
He was the founder of Atascadero?
Founder of Atascadero. He bought it was a Spanish land grant. He bought it from Mr. Henry, who owned the ranch, ran a cattle ranch. And he bought that, 1913, and with an idea of creating a city, kind of somewhat modeled on University City, but a little bit maybe more progressive because this is the first time he started from scratch. And kind of significant too was the World's Fair in 1915. That was going on at the same time. Now, we were only 200 miles from the World's Fair in Atascadero. So he was traveling back and forth and meeting with people that were planning that fair, and he used a lot of those ideas to create the city of Atascadero.
So before he bought the land that became Atascadero, Atascadero was basically a big ranch.
Oh, yeah. It was a Spanish land grant, and it was sorry, I'm going to move my binder. It was a Spanish land grant that was left over, of course, from the Spanish occupation of California. So he purchased the entire ranch and planned a city from scratch using expert from all over the Western United States. So quite unique.
So then the colony days is what?
Colony Days started 44 years ago. We're at our 44th celebration this year in 1979, started by a bunch of citizens that saw that Atascadero had no celebration of its origin. So they named it Colony Days, and ever since then, there's been a parade down El Camino Real, and then what they used to call the Mudhole Follies, which has worked into an event in the Sunken Gardens with games, and now in the 90s, I believe 13 years ago, they added Tent City, which is the reenactment of the original colony and that group of tents that Lewis put up in Atascadero where the people lived while their houses were being built.
So how big, going back to you, Nick, how big was this tent city that Lewis created?
I've seen pictures of it, and I don't know what the count, the tent number of tents. It's a couple hundred at least, maybe more.
And these people were coming from where?
I would say, mostly the eastern United States. Okay. So I can actually give you one example. I live in one of the original colony homes that was one of the other, investors in the city, and he came from Michigan. He was a doctor. And moved his family to Atascadero, and he very likely could have stayed in Tent City while his house was being built. So what Mr. Lewis did is he said, we're going to start constructing houses in around 1916, but you can't move in till 1917. So people were actually kind of overseeing or, watching their house being built while they were staying in Tent City, which had we're learning more all the time, but it had most of the services that you would need. So, barbershops, it had a mess tent. We think it might have had a theater, they definitely had church. They probably had music.
Was he planning a planned community? Was this a planned city? So it wasn't just accidentally houses going up and then another house going up next to it. This really was a planned community that was laid out.
I've talked to at least one historian in California that thinks it's probably the first master plan community and the largest land subdivision in California.
That's really
in that time period, probably up until later on after World War II, it became more common. But he what he did is he hired experts from all over California, and the one that I could share with you most was there was an architecture firm called Bliss and Favel that was active in planning the World's Fair in San Francisco. They were also planning Atascadero at the same time. So they planned the streets, they planned the building locations. So it's an example of what we would now call a zoning map. Uh-huh. So they zoned the property based on the use, industrial areas, government buildings, residential, retail, and manufacturing. They built, a whole industrial area that was just supporting the agriculture of the area that would they had a solarium that freeze-dried foods. They what comes to mind was the pumpkin flour. So he had this idea to make pumpkin pies out of powder. You just add water.
Yeah.
But it never quite took off. They had doll factories. They planned a steam plant that almost got off the ground, so it's going to be a steam car manufacturing plant. He was quite the schemer. So a lot of things in a very short period of time, about 10 to 15 years is about the time from the founding of the colony to when the federal takeover and bankruptcy.
Is there some idea about, out of the whole Central Coast, why Atascadero was selected as the site for this and the vision for him?
What I've read is that he was looking, he liked the property because it was halfway between San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Okay.
Which we all, I think we all like that.
Right.
But it was inland from the coast because he didn't like the fog.
Oh, okay.
So that, we like the fog and we like the coast. But back then, people didn't necessarily see things the same way. So there was actually a colony called the Cloisters in what we now call Morro Bay, but it was originally Atascadero Beach. And it was a resort.
Wait a minute. Yep. There was a Atascadero Beach?
Atascadero Beach up until the 70s, I think. It's Morro Strand now. And there was a group of hotels called the Cloisters where people would go and take their sea bath. So they'd take their horse or buggy and they would go over to Atascadero Beach for their, you know, week at the beach. And then I guess E.G. He was actually created the first road to make it easier to get there. And then, of course, later on, when we had bulldozers and dynamite, we straightened it out. But he created the original beach community there, and he created the road to it.
So he really had a vision for industry, too, to bring that in.
Yeah, so his concept was, and I think this is why the World's Fairs were so significant, is that he had a relationship, you know, in being the ideal community. These World's Fairs, what they were is they were mini cities that were built for 1 year.
Right.
So they were gone, and, you know, we know the one in San Francisco was gone within a year. And so they created these, you know, they create, you know, little oceans and canals and they'd have boats. And so he was watching, you know, all of that and planning a city at the same time. So I think a lot of that idea of zoning and separating things was part of, you know, his motivation.
And how long did that vision kind of continue in Atascadero?
He only lasted till about 1924.
Okay.
And at that time, he actually went bankrupt, was forced into bankruptcy. There was some controversy over the post office.
Over the post office?
Yes. Atascadero, because the first building finished in Atascadero in 1915 was the printery building. And so that was the lifeblood of the community, not only that it provided a lot of jobs for the people that were here living in the tents, but it also provided a huge ability for him to print all of the information that he sent out to everyone trying to get them to purchase lots here and invest in the colony. So in doing that with the printery, then he started the Atascadero News.
Huh.
And then they started a publication called the Illustrated Review, which was an international publication and had, I can't remember the number, but a massive number, almost 100,000 of subscriptions all over the world. So with that quantity of paper coming in and publications going out, they also printed the color editions of the Sunset Magazine, the covers, and the inserts for San Francisco Chronicle and the LA Times. They brought in these huge rotogravure presses. So that was the lifeblood going on during that time. But like I say, he needed to get those publications out, and so they opened one of the largest post offices in California at the time, and got a railroad spur brought down. And so then someone got involved with the mail and called it mail fraud. And so then he was forced into bankruptcy in 1924. So his vision pretty well stopped at that point. But by that time, he had built the printery. He had finished what we now call City Hall, which is the Veterans Memorial Building, which was the bank, the assayer's office, all kinds of different things were in that building. And then he had the big, huge mercantile building. And then there was a big hotel that was finished. So many buildings were done on what he called the Atascadero Civic Center.
And what happened when that post office fraud, did the printery go belly up? Those big jobs went away?
The printery did go belly up. It was purchased. The Atascadero News stayed functioning. Someone bought the rights to the Atascadero News, and it stayed functioning out of a small building on the printery property. But the printer itself was purchased by Moran, and it became a junior college. Along with this, with the...
It became a what?
A junior college.
A junior
along
college.
Along with the Veterans Memorial Building, the original Rotunda Building. Those were both part of the junior college.
This is so interesting because I know nothing about... And this was in the 20s?
This was in the 20s.
In the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So he had an organization called Itasca Land Syndicate that owned the land, and then he also designed quite a few of the buildings. And then also constructed them.
Was he an architect or a wannabe architect?
I think he, yeah, I guess he wasn't an architect, but he probably thought a lot like one.
Yeah.
He had originally
and
was
a city planner. And a
he was a planner.
Certainly visionary.
Favell from San Francisco was the original city architect.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pretty well known in San Francisco for doing civic planning and, of course, the World's Fair. And then later on it was J.J. Roth was his, I believe, was his nephew. And he came up originally from University City in Missouri, and then came to, I think, Hollywood. He had an office in Hollywood, I know, and he had an office in Atascadero, and he did a lot of the school buildings. So all the school buildings were, you know, privately held. So he built the what we would call the I think it was Santa Margarita Black at the time, but we now call it Atascadero High School. And then he originally built the elementary school, which is the site of the junior would be now the junior high middle school. He built both of those. He built the largest hotel, and I've seen ads for that. They advertised, you know, they would have these brag sheets in these magazines in L.A., and he was listed as the architect for the largest hotel in Atascadero. I forget how many rooms it was. It's pretty large, and it was the largest building at the time, and had an indoor mall on the first floor where you could buy clothing, had a men's store. So it was the first indoor mall in California.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so we had a lot of people traveling from San Francisco to L.A., and their
right.
Model Ts were getting pretty hot at the time, and
yeah.
People were doing these road trips, which would take a lot longer than today, so they would stay at the hotel, and there's quite a few movie stars that were, you know, recorded as staying there for a day or two. So it's kind of the place to be.
This is really fascinating. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, public supported radio for the Central Coast. And this is our fall pledge drive, and we need to hear from you. We reach out to you on air twice a year because we need your support. We need you to keep giving. To keep programming like this coming to you, whether it's music or news, information, ideas. This is a local program, and Fred Monroe and I are share the hosting of this program, and we're honored to do that because we get to talk with people like Nick and Karen. For me, it's a pleasure because I'm learning something new every time I host the show, and I hope you are too. We volunteer for it because we think it makes a difference. It makes a difference to know about our community. It makes a difference for us to care about our community. And you make a difference when you help us to continue to do what we love to do. If you want to continue to have this kind of programming, whether it's this show or shows that we bring to you from the national broadcasting, shows like All Things Considered or, any of our shows, my mind is slipping here. Please do call us at 549-8855 and make a pledge today. It doesn't matter how much, whatever you feel comfortable in giving, or you can do it online at kcbx.org. You can make a one-time pledge, or you can make a pledge that is done every month or every quarter. You can make the call on what you want. We'd love to hear from you, and we love the fact that you listen to us. We'd love to talk to you when you call in to make your pledge. If you want to ask some questions of Nick and Karen today, I'm asking the questions right now because I get to be the host today, but If you want to ask them some questions, we'd love to hear from you, too. And that's a different number. That's 781-3875. Or if you have some history you'd like to share about Atascadero or even share your experience with Colony Days, this is a good show to do it on. Again, that's 781-3875. And so let's talk a little bit about, you know, the history of Atascadero is just, you know, it's incredibly visionary for this individual to have come here and done what he did. It's unfortunate there was no one to carry that vision forward after he had financial troubles, and it sounds like things just kind of stopped. What happened with the individuals that were working in the printery? I mean, were they remaining here, getting other jobs? Did things kind of dissipate?
We know a lot of people stayed.
Were there other
It must have been a confusing time, and I think we don't know a lot about it. Mm-hmm. We know that that there was a federal, I don't know what his title was, solicitor, whatever mm-hmm. the person would be that would actually liquidate the city.
It was a city.
It was a privately owned city, uh-huh. and they liquidated it. And that's how the Moran School was created. Was sold off to for a school, and then a lot of the other properties were just sold off. Anything the city owned was sold off, including the streets. So a lot of banks took over the title of the streets and held them for decades. And you know, that's kind of the story until I think then there's a World War II period,
right?
Which I think a lot of families, the town started growing, you know, pre-World War II, and then it started growing because of Camp Roberts and Camp San Luis mm-hmm. and the military families that moved to the area.
Right.
And then we got the modern period, which is, you know, our Central Coast growth. So it was, I think, kind of chaotic up until, well, maybe even today, because at one point the county took it over and started, creating a zoning map or a zoning ordinance that didn't really match what was planned from 1920.
Yeah.
So we have the 1970s version of county trying to work with what's been kind of built willy-nilly for decades. And then now the city took, you know, the cityhood was, Karen, 1987, I think.
1979.
Sorry. I'll get trouble for that. But the city was incorporated in 1979, and then, of course, now we have a whole new layer of planning. So it's unique.
We just got joined by Greg Rabbit. Is that how you say your last name?
That's Greg Rabbit.
I mean, not Greg Rabbit.
Nicholas Mattson.
Oh, you're Nick.
We switched.
You switched.
Yeah, we're twins. Can't you tell?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've been calling you Nick, and you haven't even corrected me. You're so polite.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. You need to talk right in.
Okay.
That. So thank you for joining us.
Yes, thanks. Got here as quick as I could.
Okay. Well, you were listening to yourself on the radio. Did you know that? Because I'm talking to Nick the whole time. So that must have been a little
disorienting. Yeah, that was me. Didn't know when the city was
so
incorporated.
You're the Colony Days Committee Vice Chair.
Yeah, the Vice Chair. I'm also in charge of sponsorship and logistics.
Okay, great. Talk a little bit about Colony Days. Why that got picked up? Why was all of a sudden in the 70s, I think it was, why in the 70s did Atascadero go, you know, we should do Colony Days?
Oh, goodness. Maggie Vandergon. You can't say enough. And Lon Allen. I mean, you can't say enough about those pioneers who decided that Atascadero needed to celebrate its history. It was too long coming. And I know Maggie Vandergon was a longtime member of the Pioneer Day Parade Committee in Paso Robles. And she lived in Atascadero. And that's just Maggie that I know. She put her foot down and said, you guys need to start celebrating this. And here we are today, 44 years later. So and I've gotten to know her over the past few years. A wonderful woman and does not take no for an answer. She gets the job done. Wonderful woman, and I'm grateful for her. As somebody who was born in 1978, that event is older than I am. I've been blessed by people who have done that event for us, and now I'm here with two other people who have made an effort to keep it going. It's really cool.
So Atascadero, based on this history and stuff too, it's kind of a sleeper community in terms of the awareness, I think the general awareness of people that there's this rich history and this rich culture in terms of the entrepreneurial background of it, the origins of it.
Yeah.
So was it really to bring that forward? And to say, wait a minute, that's, it's not just a small town with
a little quiet community. Yeah. I think we're still getting that message across. Even after 44 years of celebrating mm-hmm. Colony Days, we're still reminding that sleepy little town that it was basically created by an entrepreneurial vision. And that energy that comes with entrepreneurs that say, it's not here, I'm going to build it. And this is what it's going to look like. We have that spirit in Atascadero. I was born and raised there. I'm back there now. I moved back in 2006, and I knew that's where I wanted to raise my kids because it is a home community that has a wonderful culture. But it also, and I think you're seeing a little bit of a revival right now of that mentality that this is something that we have control over, and we want to help create what's next for Atascadero.
So talk a little bit, Greg, about, you had mentioned that tent city approach while the homes were being built. And you were involved in the recreation of that tent city during Colony Days. We're going to talk about how much goes on during Colony Days. I had no idea how expansive it was. But Tent City, describe Tent City, Greg.
Tent City is kind of an event that's happening within the larger event. Colony Days is just really, a massive.
You mentioned
I can't even imagine having you guys planning it. I'm just always impressed when I talk to you guys about how much goes into the planning.
You
Tent
mentioned
City,
before we came on the air that you don't get to go out and see all of this stuff because you're kind of stuck in the Tent City. Right?
I've been doing Tent Cities from the second year, starting the second year. So I've been doing it for, 11 years now. And I'm one of the originally, we were recruited by Mayor Tom, Mayor Tom O'Malley was he mayor then? I don't know.
He's been around a while.
He's been around a while. Anyway, so it was kind of his brainchild. And so we're walking around looking at all the cool stuff, and he says, maybe I want to buy a tent, or maybe I want to be involved in the tent. And, boy, he got me right away. So I bought a tent almost on the spot there. So we started out with what's called a family tent. So there's different sizes originally. There was kind of like the small home tent, and then there was a home tent plus a small business, or there's a business size tent. So we had different sizes of tents.
So were these replicas of what the tents looked like in the period?
As close as we can figure out.
So you're trying to do this from pictures?
They are. We did originally commission the tents from a reenactor.
Okay.
So they're probably very similar. They're probably not exact. I think a lot of the tents originally were on what we'd call a boardwalk, so they're raised boards, mm-hmm. keep you out of the dirt. We're actually doing them, more on cloths on the dirt. So not perfect reenactment, but I think the intents there. And so there was a number of tents bought up by different businesses in town and different residential tents. And so we kind of started out a little bit. We were organized, but it was more of we were just a bunch of people hang out in tents wearing interesting clothes.
Wearing costumes.
And having bringing our antiques and having a campfire and just having a good time. And we did have the idea of actors reenacting. That's evolved every year. So now we actually have Diane Greenaway's got a pretty amazing program where she's training actors. I was telling you from I think as young as six all the way up to 60. and they're actually taking on a character.
And how long is the Tent City open?
We start, I think, when the parade is over at 10, and it goes to 3. They know all the rules. I'm just waiting for we have an onslaught of people that come through. So as soon as the parade starts to slow down, people just start, you know, coming to Tent City. So it's a lot of fun. We have we have laundry. Kids get to do laundry. We have pie eating contests. There's something almost every hour, especially for the kids.
Is it open for one day?
It's open for one day, but we've been doing some community work with the schools. So we've been bringing children in the day before. So we'll bring in middle school children to kind of, and so we'll do a pre-event tour. So a lot of the tent and the actors will be available the day before calling days.
And so these actors are in a character.
Yes.
And a character of the period. So a character of the people who would have migrated here during that period.
Yeah, so we're pretty safe to say that most of the people that would have been in Tent City weren't from California.
Right.
They're mostly from the East Coast or they're from Europe. So we have people kind of pick their character, and then they practice. So they have, especially for the teenagers and the kids, they have the Newsies.
Yeah.
You've heard of the Newsies?
Yes.
Okay. They run around hawking papers for 2 cents, and then we have Tent City money. And so the kids have a great time.
I'll bet. It sounds like a great way to learn history for kids. I was thinking as you were describing it to me before that it's a great immersion way to be in the center of something to make it live and active.
Yes, and I don't want to forget that we usually have Mr. Lewis and Mabel Lewis.
Oh, so you have somebody playing the role of Mr. Lewis?
Yeah. Okay. We've had some great Mr. Lewis's. We have different actors every year, some of them for multiple years, but that usually gets, we always have volunteers, and it's pretty. And we've also, some of the other actors, just give you an idea, they might come around, and they're supposed to stay in the time period, so they'll be talking about whether we're going to, you know, go to Europe in World War I or not.
Okay.
Or should we stay out of it?
So, great.
Yeah, so it's kind of, I don't know. That's kind of been my world for Call Me Days, so.
That's fantastic. I love it. We're talking about Colony Days in Atascadero that takes place October 21st. It's going to be its 40th year. And with me today are Nick Mattson from the Colony Days Committee Vice Chair, Greg Ravitt, who is Colony Days participant and Atascadero Historical Society member, and Karen McNamara, who's the committee chair for Colony Days. And also with us today is Pledge Drive, and we're reaching out to you to help support us in continuing to bring this kind of programming and all kinds of programming from local news and excellent music of all genres to national news and both sides of stories. Wonderful programming to make you laugh, to make you cry, and everything that we do here is something for somebody. Whether it's your favorite show, it's probably someone's favorite show, and we'd love to continue to bring it for you. And we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have you make your pledge today of any amount, whatever's comfortable for you. And you can do that by calling in at 549-8855. And or you can pledge at kcbx.org. We made it really easy. It's really apparent on the front of the website. And again, you can make your pledge for a one-time pledge. You could do it for a monthly pledge. You could give every day if you wanted to, or you could give every quarter, whatever works for you. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd also love to open our phone lines if you have questions about our topic today on Central Coast Voices. You can call us at 781-3875. We're talking about Colony Days that's coming up. And I'm going to go over to Nick and talk about, we've talked a little bit about tent cities. So I understand there's a whole lot that goes on with Colony Days. Talk to me a little bit about, between you and Karen, what the rest of the event looks like.
Sure. And have we talked about the different location for Tent City yet?
No.
I'll just dive into that then. That's an exciting bit of news for us is the bridge, the Centennial Bridge, is being developed right now in Atascadero to bridge the Sunken Gardens area with Colony Square. What that means is it displaces the Tent City location this year. So we had to figure out where we're going to put Tent City, and we agreed to trial run of putting it square into Sunken Gardens. So instead of being off to the side, it's front and center, which I really appreciate because I think Tent City being a part of the founding and a part of the first generation of Atascadero, that's one of the neatest things we have. We have a great parade, but then being able to go in there, like Greg said, to involve yourself and kind of immerse yourself into the period. Don Clarius, he takes these kids who are going to act as Tent City actors. He teaches them the manners, and he brought that up. That's one of the biggest challenges he has is he has to take a child born in 1998 or older than that, or even younger than that, excuse me, and he has to teach that kid who has all the manners of today's age, and he has to take them and reprogram them to adopt the manners and the polite way that they treated people from the 1913 and 1916.
First, you have to pry their cell phones and iPods away from them.
It's quite a process.
That's really a challenge.
It is a process, yeah. And so they have to sign a waiver that I'm sure that says you will you may suffer some emotional trauma.
Yes,
through this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Parents have to agree to that.
Yeah.
My poor child.
So that's exciting news, and we love it because it puts Tent City front and center, and really is going to make that a crowning part of at least this year's event. And then we'll see if it worked. Then we may do it again in the future.
You mentioned a parade. What's in the parade?
Who wants to be a part of the parade? I mean, it's volunteer. It's open to anyone who wants to promote it's for free. Anyone who wants to celebrate being a part of this community.
Are you asking them to be of that period? Are you asking them to have a float? If I wanted to ride my bicycle
or ride your bike,
walk my dog in it.
Yeah. All kinds. We have a woman who has been in multiple times, and she has I think it's a dwarf pony of some kind, and it tows her down the road. So whatever you bring.
It's very homegrown.
Yeah. Whatever you bring to it. In the history, one of our favorites has been a elephant on roller skates. So we have
a
real elephant on real roller skates. You know, so we're looking for another one of those. If anybody out there has an elephant in their backyard who can roller skate, we would love to bring that back to the parade. So it's anything anybody can dream up and wants to take down the parade. We have extended the parade route to be more straight back to its original parade route, which starts about Pueblo. We kind of shortened it this year, and it goes straight down El Camino. So if you can dream it and you want to be a part of our parade, we want you to go to the website or go to the chamber and pick up a parade application to be a part of the parade for free, and we'll help you in any way we can get ready for that.
So what is the website?
It's colonydays.org.
Okay.
And then from there, you can find the links for the parade. We have a big vendor fair. That's another part of the parade, the whole festivities, that we have about 100 or so vendors that show up, and they don't have to dress up, but they can. As Tent City starts to get its legs under it, I can envision our whole parade being a way for people to appreciate the period and really dress up in their vendor space and have their tent and really adopt the park.
And what kind of vendors do you have? Artists?
We have all kinds. Okay. We have food vendors.
Okay.
We have the Knights of Columbus do a barbecue, tri-tip barbecue. We have several food vendors. We have beer and wine. Did I misspoke? Because there's always ABC licenses to go through there. So we make sure that we have that keyed in. But let's see, people selling clothes. We have a LuLaRoe vendor who is approaching us right now. They have a 30-foot trailer that they want to bring to the event to sell their clothing. It does cost to be a vendor, but it's also, as long as it's appropriate for our festival, if you sell it or you want to promote it, we have nonprofits that come down and promote their nonprofit. Tent City the Printery Foundation basically started there. Karen got that together, brought a booth down there, and got a bunch of great volunteers to help us start that. So it's a really community-oriented, but we'll have Costco there. We'll have political candidates who show up there. So it's anything and everything as long as it fits within our parameters of appropriateness.
So is this fundraising for a cause, or does the money go back into Colony Days? Does it go back into something else?
So Colony Days is a 501c3 that's mm-hmm. its purpose is to put on the parade, to celebrate Atascadero's history. We basically raise enough money each year to pay for the event, and that's where the money goes. So we do sponsors. We have great sponsorship community that shows up and supports it. So most of our money comes from sponsors who are community businesses who want to see this parade continue and be a part of it. So they will sponsor, and that money all goes back into.
Okay, Karen, did you want to say something? Because you need to talk right into the mic.
We can't forget the dog races.
Yes.
The Heilman Park dog park a thing that came to Atascadero, I want to say about 5-6 years ago.
Right, it's an off-leash park.
It's an off-leash park, mm-hmm. and they support their whole park by putting on what they used to call Dogtoberfest. Well, they've joined with Colony Days, so during the afternoon, we have the dog races right there in Sunken Gardens. So Tent City will be on one end, the dog races will be on the other. The vendors will be scattered throughout the park. It's going to be a great afternoon.
And what are the dog races?
It is wiener dog races.
You have to be a wiener dog?
I believe
small dogs.
Small dogs.
Small dogs,
yeah. Okay. They do small dogs.
You can
dogs.
Be a wiener dog wannabe.
Yeah.
Okay.
They have quite a few races. They have a lot of entrants from all over California. And then they have a costume contest, so anybody
for
can
the
come.
Dogs or the people.
Anybody can come and dress up. You can either dress up your dog, or you can dress up. They have a category for the dog and the owner.
Okay. So do you have more dogs dressed up than the owners?
Yes.
You know, I would imagine you do, because we can always make our dogs look
but
really stupid.
But that's a very, very popular event that adds to the festivities. We have amusements, so we'll have some. They have the bungee jump and a couple other.
You have a bungee jump.
Yes. There's a bungee jump there, and quite
a bounce houses,
yeah. A lot of things. The Elks bring what they call Joe's Little Train, which takes the young kids around. So they're on one end of the streets there by the city hall. They'll be running that all day. So a lot of things to do, and we wanted to encourage everybody to make it. You can make it a weekend, make it a day.
Is it a 2-day event?
It is a 1-day event.
Okay.
The kids from the schools come on Friday.
Okay. So it is Saturday.
So it's Saturday, but we have the Historical Society has their house open, so their museum is open, and there's also tours of City Hall. So you can make a really full day out of it, from the parade to everything. And we have made one little twist this year. The parade is going right down West Mall. It's going to turn down West Mall, which will go right by the Sunken Gardens, which is going to be another interesting thing. That's the way it used to be a long time ago. But that way the vendors can see a little more of the parade and people can be closer to the afternoon festivities. They can be right there.
That's fantastic. So she mentioned the Historical Society. I am, you know, I'm always curious about historical societies, and your goal, obviously, I think, obviously, is to preserve the history of Tascadero and to teach that. Talk a little bit about the Historical Society and what you have through the Historical Society that's available in Atascadero for people to come and visit and see.
Well, we have on East Mall, there's a colony home that's been restored by the Historical Society. That's actually a museum right now. And it's a great place to go and kind of find out, look at exhibits and materials from the time period, artwork. We had a lot of arts and crafts going on in that period. There's a pottery, quite a bit of pottery. There's all sorts of artifacts to look at and historical. And actually a really nice nature or a native plant garden around the building that that volunteers have done over the years. And there's also plans in the works for some expansion. So over by the library, Atascadero Library, there's some property that was donated, and the Historical Society is working on Jim Wilkins is spearheading, he's our president, and he's spearheading the design of a kind of a colony house complex. So we're going to be kind of focusing on it's just there's so much to really go over, but there's going to be we've already moved the Boy Scout cabin up there, and then there's three other houses that are planned to be moved that were original colony homes that were on property that is being developed for retail. The original Walmart site, there's a home there. There's another home. There's two other homes in the vicinity that are being, they've been donated by the landowners, and we're moving them down next to the library. So that's going to be a little colony home complex. And that's probably coming up in the next two or three years. So I think the Historical Society is going to continue to grow and continue to get involved in the community. And
the colony homes are the original homes that Lewis built.
They're classified as homes that were from 1917 to, I don't know when the cutoff is, but about 1930. And that was the original period of construction.
Do you have any ideas how many of those are still being lived in?
There's surveys. We've had some students actually drive around, and there's a book that gets reprinted every once in a while with a Cal Poly architect, I think, did a book with I think about 100 homes in it. So that's like a little, you can get that, you can do your own tour and go around and look at those houses. But I think the number that I've heard is about 300 were constructed in that period, of all different styles and sizes and types of constructions. It's pretty interesting.
Well, do you have ideas of what, you know, is this this plan for a planned community, is that something that's starting to resurge in Atascadero? I mean, you guys all live in Atascadero, right?
I'd love to think so, yeah. The idea that we're taking a really good look at where we're going. We have some great people, a developer, Mike Zappas, who is really fond of Atascadero's history and really has a passion for where we're going. He's taken really strong strides. I know that Greg has been involved in it. There's a little resurgence, and I hope we can capitalize on that energy and really, you know, get back to a master plan.
And I think, you know, small towns across the United States are becoming more and more interesting to people, and they're coming back. They want to live downtown. They want to work downtown. They want to have their businesses downtown, shop downtown. And I think we all see that around us. And I think Atascadero is just slightly behind the curve.
Yeah.
So we're coming back.
Yeah. It's, you know, for a town that started with so much energy, it's, you know, it just hasn't gotten there yet. It's great that you're keeping that focus on this rich history. It would be nice to see it carry forward. And I'm thinking that's part of what Colony Days is about, right? Not only celebrating the past, but also looking toward the future. Yeah. So what else do you want people to know about what is coming up with Colony Days here?
Our theme is Fall in Love with Atascadero this year. So we're trying to really get people to go back to thinking about what Atascadero does mean and did mean to them, and to kind of think again about what Atascadero really means to them. And one of the things that we are, Nick and Greg and I are working on the Atascadero Printery Foundation. So we're trying to get people to think about that history, go clear back to that history of things, and the printery needs some help. So
now the printery is a closed building.
The printery is a closed building. It was damaged in 2003 in an earthquake, and it was a community center before it was damaged.
Okay.
So our goal is to turn it back into somewhat of a community center. We're hoping to have a working printery museum inside of it as part of it, and then a lot of other things. We're talking about adding a 350-seat theater on it, so we'll have a performing arts place in Atascadero and a place for a lot of activities. But so we're going to ask people to take a little tour around the building. You can't go in, but take a little tour around the building and fall in love with the printery again, because it was the lifeblood of Atascadero.
Yeah.
But we just want people to, we're trying to bring back that feel of community. And we are the community of Atascadero, all of us that live there. And we just need to come together. And this is just a great way for everybody to come together and appreciate what we have and work together toward the future.
So the vision is a community center for performing arts and for a lot of different. How big is the printery?
Right now it's 19,000 square feet. So it's a large building. So we need some more places for community meetings and events in Atascadero. We don't have enough. So we're looking at places like the Senior Citizens United is trying to have senior lunch in the living room of a house, and they need a bigger place. And
sure.
We need a lot more events for youth too. So looking at somebody bringing in a performing arts school,
right.
And then science, technology, math. We're hoping to have with that printery museum have more of a maker space. It would all be in one. And kind of a vocational training, just a lot of things that Atascadero could really use.
So what's it going to take?
What's it going to take?
Yeah.
I don't know, guys. How many million?
Blank check.
I mean, have you looked at how far have you gotten with this, or is this just really at the very beginning? Is the building purchased?
We just purchased the building in May off the tax auction, so we owe right now we owe about $250,000 on the mortgage. So we'd love to pay that off right away. But then, I don't know, if we get the Performing Arts Center, probably be somewhere in the total of about $19
million. Wow.
But just to restore the building, we're thinking under six.
$6 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we're kind of in the discovery phase now, since we now own the building. The Printing Foundation owns the building. But there's been a lot of work done in the past by the city and others. There was power upgrades to the building. There's surveys done to the building. There's damage assessments. I've got a whole binder here. I've been holding it this whole time. So there's a lot of work, and right now we're trying to do like the historical chronology of what's been done. And we've also got volunteers coming from all walks of life. So we've got historians that are volunteering their time to upgrade the restoration plan. We've got structural engineers that have actually, put some time into it to give us an evaluation and reviewing some of the reports that have been done in the past, and hopefully we'll, be preparing plans so we can go out and get grants. I think the immediate need right now is the building wasn't boarded up very well,
mm-hmm.
and so as a result, it kind of became a target for, I'm going to say, teenagers. I think. They've broken over 80% of the windows, of the glass in the windows, mm-hmm. which is a shame, because it didn't have to happen if it was boarded up properly. So now what we're trying to do is we're trying to get some donations of material, Lexan bolts. We've got a list on our website. We want to board up the windows, hopefully before the onset of bad weather, so we can kind of control, the amount of moisture going in and out of this historical building.
So what's it going to take to do that?
Well, if we had to put a number on it, it was less than $10,000 for materials. We're a volunteer organization. People are donating money and they're donating time.
Okay.
And so
are you formed as a 501?
Oh yeah. And okay. I just want to say we got people are trying to volunteer. I mean, and it's amazing. We've already got some pledges on some of the materials for the windows. But so it's one step at a time.
So if people wanted to volunteer for or do something for the foundry, how would they do that?
Go to atascadoprintery.org, or we're on Facebook at Atascadero Printery, and see, we have our needs list. It'll be posted up there quickly, and there's always needs for donations of money. We're hoping that there's a lot of people out there that love history. I say Atascadero really became one of the big features on the Central Coast with the printery and all of the industry that was moving in and out of the printery. So like I say, it really put the Central Coast on the map. So it involves really more than just the people of Atascadero. Uh-huh. But they can go on our website and check us out.
And volunteers. If people live in Atascadero and they want to give back to their city, volunteers are always appreciated. We have about 2 minutes. So to find out more about Colony Days.
So to find out more about Colony Days, go to colonydays.org, like our Facebook page, reach out to us. We'll get back to you as soon as possible. We have parade chair, vendor chair, myself. We'll all help you out in any questions you have regarding that. We want to make a great parade. It's less than 2 months away, so if you're going to build a float, now's the time to get started on that. We will help you with ideas or direction on where to get materials and things like that if you need. So reach out to us. We'll be happy to help you.
Okay. If you need to, if you're going to put your dog in the wiener dog race, you want to start training him now because you've got only 2 months to get him in shape, right? Okay. And for the Historical Society, too, you're open Monday through when?
I'm not sure what the hours right now, honestly. I know they're open at least 3 days a week.
Okay.
I hope I'm not misstating.
So do you?
And I want to give a plug for Tent City because I forgot so many things. Don't forget we're making apple. They squeeze apples. We have laundry. There's the Bucket Brigade. There's music. I'm forgetting so many people.
Tent City After Dark concert.
Tent City After Dark.
At night.
The Blacksmith. I'm forgetting people. I'm going to get in trouble.
Well,
the Red Cross.
It's okay if people want to go.
Ice Cream Parlor.
Ice Cream Parlor.
People need to just go, and we're running out of time here. So please do call in with your pledge. Remember that we absolutely depend on you. If you can, whatever you can give will help support us and support our programming to keep coming to you. The volunteers and the staff appreciate it, and we hope you appreciate it too. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you've been listening to, I got a whole minute. Thank you, Bree. I'm looking at Bree. That's great. Well, I want to say too that next week Fred Monroe is going to be here. He's going to be doing a show on marijuana and some of the aspects that are now being talked quite a bit about with marijuana. We're going to do two shows on it, both pros and cons. And I'm not sure which side Fred has or which side I have, so I get it when I get it handed to me by our producer. This show is produced by both KCBX and in collaboration with Action for Healthy Communities. And we gratefully do this with the underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. We are thrilled to be here and look forward to having you with Fred next week.
Thank you.